Hello again, everybody. Welcome. This is Julie Knutson with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 132. Today's episode is going to be a little bit of a combination. I'm going to incorporate some listener questions in with the experiences that I'm having with the 11-week-old puppy that I'm raising right now. And so it's going to be basically oriented towards little guys and also a little bit of the way to think about dog training a little bit more globally. So that's what it's going to be about. She has a call name now. Her name is going to be G, as in the letter G. I mean, that's her call name. What her official name is going to be, I'm not real sure. Right now, there's a lot of other names that I've been using. But G is the official call name. It's what we'll send her on retrieves and stuff like that. She's been on the Facebook page and I've been showing a little bit of pictures. We had a wild and exciting day because this dog is slated for hunting and competitive hunting things. And so she had an opportunity this weekend to be on live quail. No shooting, nothing like that, but just to, you know, be exposed to the actual real thing. So and I had some questions on the Facebook page, and it's interesting because people, we all approach this in a very, determined way. We got these series of things, there's behaviors that we need. So let me just explain where we are right now in the regular world. We do our walk every day, and she has learned now that there are delightful edibles everywhere, and almost anything falls into that category. And dead things, anything dead or anything excreted from something dead is all delicious fair game. And so I do the obvious. I feed her before the walk so that we have a full tummy and we don't have that hungry puppy thing. It really makes no difference. And now she's learned, because I show my obvious displeasure with it, she's learned that this is a fun game. She knows now when she sees something out there that I'm going to react when she goes over to it. And so she'll grab it and then run away. And so she's turned this into a game. And when she's doing that, she's kind of controlling things. So I have to stop responding. And at the same time, I feel kind of obligated that I need to go after this a little bit so I don't get a dog that's really sick. So it's a tough situation. And I know many, many of you have been in this same thing. If you're walking these dogs where there's all kinds of puppy truffles out there. So that's a little bit of the issue. So because that's how she looks at everything, is a game and an edible deal. This weekend when she got exposed to some little bobwhite quail that were just in the grass, she just thought we were kind of walking around out there. And then suddenly when she got wind of this live thing, and I don't know what the live, she has some, they, I know they have a sense of a life force there, but I don't really know what they think of it. But she got wind of it. And so the first one, as soon as she got near it, one just popped up and flew away. I don't even know that she knew that that had happened. And we encounter another one, and she gets wind of this and starts to go in on it. And this little guy flies, and she sees it. She takes a few steps and then just stops and watches it. So all good. You know, I like that. She's learning to understand that there's something there when you have that certain smell. By the way, that's something they don't just automatically know. You know, people think, oh, it's an upland hunting dog. It's going to hunt birds. And it really, they don't know what all this means in the beginning. They get this compelling smell, and then it flies, and they just don't know. So definitely no shooting of birds, because that's like putting the whole thing together yet, and we're not even close to having a clue about what a live bird is. So I was happy with that. She was very excited. Then I couldn't get her out of the field. She just wanted to go look for more of these fun little exciting things. It was like a squeaky toy that flies, so it was even better. So I had to finally go get her. And, of course, now we've got the, well, catch me if you can thing from the truffle eating on our walks. So then I had to throw my glove to get her to come over to me so I could grab her and get her out of the field. So all of that in a young dog this young is positive. All of that, it's frustrating, and we were, you know, everybody was having to wait for us to get out of the way before they could go run more big dogs. it's frustrating, but it means that this dog is engaged in this activity, really likes it, that the little wing flying thing is extremely compelling to them. All that stuff is good. So, and then to have just such a tenacious desire about it at this age, well, you always want that desire. Right now, I can't correct that because it's just starting to form. So to get after this little dog, to put a cord on her and start jerking her around would be entirely out of context. And no matter how tempting that is, to make it be the way I want it to be, she has to learn that this is her heroin field. This is just the greatest thing in the world. And obviously she's taking to that really well. So I got her and we put her up. Where I got into a problem is later on, everybody had been, when we're coming back from shooting birds for the big dogs, they were throwing them on the ground. So when I let her out of where she was in the back of somebody's truck and she got on the ground, she goes directly to that pile. It's my mistake. I should never have let that happen. Grabbed one of those little quail bodies, which is real easy for her to carry. And then we spent an extended period of time, and we is all everybody there, chasing her through the barbed wire fence and through the heavy stuff and across the other fence and then back. And she is having the time of her life, having all of us chase her with this wonderful, warm, squishy thing in her mouth. And then at the same time, because it was something dead, well, we eat those. So she is chewing and trying to swallow while evading us and getting under the wire and through the wire and on this other side and back and forth. And I had grown men flinging themselves like a rugby players on the ground trying to catch this dog. You know, you don't want them to learn that birds are for eating. Anyway, long story short, she got the whole thing down when we finally, somebody nabbed her. I don't even know how. And we got her. There was no bird left, so she had gotten the whole thing down. So I didn't put her down again. I got a leash and put it on her and we got out of the entire area. We had to just leave the whole thing because I now had basically a crackhead on my hands. All she wanted to do was find those things, eat those things, look for those things out in the field. All right. So other than the mistake I made of giving her the chance to go eat that thing. And again, totally my fault because any red-blooded crackhead is going to go do that. If everything was good, she obviously loves this stuff. So no, do I go after corrective behavior on this? Am I going to put her on a cord now and prevent all of this stuff? No, because she doesn't know what all of this stuff is. And in the learning process in a little dog's mind, my job is to provide the appropriate opportunities and not provide the opportunities like the dead bird pile that you don't want. That's ultimately the answer to this. She doesn't know the difference. She doesn't really know about live game birds. Everything is fair game to her. Everything is on its crunchability and its eatability. And that's just how she is right now. So instead of getting after this little dog, I'm going to make sure my opportunities are better set up. You know, I kind of blew it on that one. So I'll put her on birds again, but I'm going to have birds that fly the minute you get near them. And yeah, that's money flying away, but we're going to have that. So the birds, she can't go in, because right now, if she smells a bird, I know what she's going to want to do. And that's go in and grab it. And she's got to learn that that doesn't happen. So I don't think all is lost on this, but it certainly didn't help me on the live bird thing when she found out how tasty a freshly dead one is. And then in terms of not being able to catch her, I'm going to talk about that a little bit because a lot of us go through this. You know, I've had little puppies, these little retriever guys, that I never had that problem with. I believe with Naked, the dog I did showcased on here prior, she always brought stuff back. That was just how her nature was. And so she would bring stuff back. This dog is not quite that way. And her mother, Zia, which is a dog that had did everything she was ever asked, highest kind of acclaim we could get on her. She was real good. And then she got kind of wild and crazy and stopped coming back. A little older than this, but her mother did the same thing. So I understand that this could happen with her. And I'm not going to, you know, go, oh my God, I have to fix this right now. But how do I say this? It's frustrating, but I have to be real careful that I don't make the retrieving thing become a place where bad stuff happens. She's just too young mentally to understand that. Z was a little bit older, and so we just put the long cord on and just basically flipped her upside down when she wouldn't come back. And it took really about 3 or 4 times of that, and she said, you know, I get the idea. This dog is too young for too much of that. So what I've started to do, and I'll report on this as we go along, is I started some leash work with her. Now, any of you that were here when I was talking about Naked, the dog I did 2 years ago, when I put the leash on this little dog who had been so compliant, came back on every retrieve, did, you know, just wonderful, didn't run back to the house on our way back. She was a breeze and also a breeze baby. But anyway, she was a breeze. And then I put the leash on her because it was time to start that. I'd say she was probably 4 to 5 months, maybe closer to 5 in there. And all of a sudden, you talk about the Jekyll Hyde thing. And I talked about it, how we walked from my kennel down to the mailbox, which is about 1/2 mile, maybe that far. When we did that, you would have thought I had a rabid hyena on the end of the leash, or maybe a Angus calf, because she was flipping and rolling and jumping and flinging herself on her back. And just, I mean, it was a wild animal thing, which was completely a surprise to me. And, you know, having done this a couple times already, I didn't feed into that at all. I just still, when she'd just throw herself on the ground, I would just bring her back up unceremoniously. And we did that all the way 1/2 mile down to the mailbox. She was flipping and trying everything in the world as if her world had come to an end and this was just the most horrific thing, and she had to fight to the death against it. And so I, making sure she never choked herself to death, we just continued down with no emotion whatsoever down to the mailbox. And when we did whatever we did down there and turned around to come back, she finally yielded and she finally gave in, and she wasn't happy about it, but we walked all the way back, not at perfect heel. I just wanted her walking on the leash, just walk on the leash with me, and we got it coming back. So here was a dog that was just so compliant and so agreeable that became feral on me. And I mean, I've never had one that's bad in my life. And I would, you know, I would have filmed it, but I wouldn't, because it looked like I was just, there was something terrible going on there. An alligator you were trying to bring out of the swamp with a rope. So here I get little G, right? And she's kind of belligerent. She's kind of doing her own thing and getting real independent. And so I thought, I've got to start addressing this behavior and this attitude that she has. I'm not going to wait as long as I did with Z or with Naked. I'm going to kind of, so I put a little choke chain on and just a leash. And at first I let her drag it a little bit. Then I picked it up. And I would say she resisted for about 30 seconds, maybe 45 seconds. And then she stopped resisting. She didn't like it, but she went along with me. And then when we were coming back from the field and I had her on a little chain trying to get her out of there, she was fine. She didn't do the crazy thing. She didn't resist. She didn't dig in and try not to move. She actually was pretty agreeable with it. And so now she's far. She just was the opposite of Naked. She's like, walk on a leash. Well, okay, if you insist. So it's just funny how these dogs are. They're definitely not predictable and they're definitely not the same. So I am going to approach this dog with a little bit of this, you know, out, not on our walk. And not, I'm not going to do it on the retrieves yet, but we're going to just do some walking on the leash where I'm beginning to teach the dog. You know, we've already been working on sit. You don't get loves and pets till you're 4 on the floor and seated. But now we're going to walk together on a leash, not on the walk, but, you know, around the building or wherever. And we're going to walk and we're going to sit. And then when I say here, you're going to come to me and you're going to sit. And I am beginning to acquaint her with the idea of she yields and I drive. And I do it without it being a catastrophic thing, without being real severe. I am going to just do it on a daily basis. Again, not out in the field, not out in the heroin fields for her. And just teach her that when I say something, it's important. And I'm going to start on simple, harmless things that are not associated with the work that she's going to do. That's what I'm going to do until it becomes something that she just understands and kind of goes along. She's very, very young. But she just took to it really well, which tells me I can do this. Some dogs are too young to understand at this age, but she gets this. So we're going to do a little bit of the leash work, and it's going to be heel and sit and hear. And that hear thing is going to be important. I'm going to do that enough that hear means something, so that on the retrieves, which I do now in the hallway thing where she just has to come back, even though she comes halfway back and licks at me. And I'm just sitting there going, trying to get her to come to me. And if she doesn't, I don't keep trying. I just sort of end the whole thing. But I'm just thinking, I will get there, girl. We will. This will change. But I'm not going to drop the hammer on her right now because it's just not appropriate at this early age. If she was 6 months old, yes, absolutely. But I think when she's 6 months old, we'll already be past this. So anyway, that makes sense. That's what I'm doing. I'm kind of working things in two separate areas, and eventually we will get this together. And I see her sister on Facebook, goes on and comes back. So yay for her. I got the one that's a little more determined, I guess, or self-sufficient. So that's where we are on that. Again, no, I don't go in at this age on the big corrective things. I just try to condition them to thinking certain ways in a real positive way and wait until they're old enough and then begin to require that that's what they do. That's always been my approach on that stuff. So that's where little G is right now. So I'm going to talk about some of these are listener questions now. Bad or negative puppy behavior, because that's always something that people are, they're all so different. Like naked going to the mailbox, dragging almost on her back and just flipping. And I mean, I cannot, whatever you're thinking, it's not exaggerated enough. The crazy factor that went on there. So one of the things I'll say with all puppy bad behaviors is if it's something that you don't like, be careful about putting any energy into it. I didn't say don't address it. Like when Naked was just fighting me on the end of that leash and just she really thought that this was apparently going to be death. You know, if you have to walk on a leash, life is over. And so instead of going, oh no, look at this, and feeding my concern and great energy into that, you know, which would have meant she was, if she's smart, which she was, she could figure out how to manipulate this deal. And I wasn't going to let that happen. I'm not going to let her manipulate me. And I definitely had mechanical advantage, which, again, as opposed to punishment, mechanical advantage is a way better thing. I had the leash, and I could get her back up on her feet. I could get her face the right direction with a real quick just little jerk on that. And then I just walked as if none of that was happening. And granted, it took half a mile. That was the most extreme case I've ever seen. Usually it's about, you know, a minute or two, and they just give up. They get tired. But you, instead of feeding into it and going, oh, no, this is terrible. Oh, no, I need to change this or that, and you feed your concern and your worry about it, just like a human that was doing that kind of thing, they're going to learn, this is working. And it's not an intentional thing. They aren't strategizing that. You're just teaching them that. And when they get crazy like that, you stop. And so whenever they want you to stop, they get crazy. And you got to be careful about putting too much of your emotion and stuff into a negative behavior. And that's like dogs that make noise. We're going to talk about. So on the leash thing, you know, just do short stuff. And whatever they do, just require to the best of your ability that they do what you're trying. Start just on a leash. Just on a leash, not a perfect healing at your side and all that stuff. Just walk with me on the leash. Stay on it. Don't fight it. And then as they will do that, now we can bring them into your side and get you guys, you know, shoulder to shoulder or whatever it is. So just do it by carrying it out and not putting any emotion into it. People get real worried and concerned, and that's usually not a good signal to your dog. Barking is another one. Now, the way that I address barking, and I've said this before, and a lot of people won't do this. They just won't do it. But when I get a dog in the very beginning, when they're little, then they are separated. They are put away from everybody, and I mean everybody, the other dogs, family, and everything. And so then they're going to set up a fuss. For me, they're far enough away that it doesn't matter if they set up a fuss because there's no one there to hear it. And they learn that the noise, they just wear themselves out with the noise. And so pretty soon they stop. And consistently, every single day, I have this dog spend alone time. And so then it learns that sometimes I just have to be quiet. Now, I've had basically almost 100% success with that. There are a few dogs that are noise makers. That's what I always tell everybody when you're picking the dog out of the litter. Don't get the one that screeches all the time, because sometimes they screech all their life, and it's hard to stop. They either have to be with you or you have a bark collar on or something like that. But for the most part, if you teach them when they're very, very young that noise doesn't get them anything, then you are well on your way to having a dog that doesn't make noise. Now, when they're isolated, when they're often by themselves, they can't be watching you out with the other dog playing frisbee. Okay, obviously, they really need to learn how to get into their own heads and settle down. That's the best way. If you respond to their noise, then you teach them how to get you to respond, and that's by making noise. So that's one to start early, because if you have to use a collar, electric collar, ways to stop them from barking, then you always have to do that. And if you don't have it, then you can't control it. So it's a lot better to go from the beginning and not let that happen. Now, another question that I got was about food aggressiveness. that's apparently, there are some dogs that have that. I've gotten some people, they go, well, be careful when you reach for their bowl. They kind of growl at you. Okay, a dog doing that is absolutely 100% unacceptable 100% of the time. And a few times over the years with dogs I've had, my Pyrenees that I had, that I talk about, she did that. She didn't do it as a little tiny puppy, but I'd say she was maybe 5 or 6 months old. And I had put her food down somewhere outside. And then I wanted to move it because we were going to do something else and I needed her out of the way. And she growled at me. And without even thinking about it, there wasn't a conscious thought. I took this 5 or 6 month old Pyrenees puppy, picked her up and just slammed her to the ground. Now, I know that's tough. This is a Pyrenees though. This is a big tough, and this is a dog that could kill. That's what they do, is they keep the wolves away from stuff. So I did something that for her, a very sensitive dog, was very abrupt and very meaningful. And she never did it again. You could pick up her pan while she was eating, take it away, do whatever you wanted, put it back, and she just waited politely. So the first time that she showed me the signs of that thing is the first time she learned that is not a thing to do. So I feel, a dog that is being somewhat aggressive and telling you, I don't like what you're doing, and your hand is by their mouth, okay, that is just something to never let grow even the tiniest bit. And I know that to some people that may seem very harsh, but there are some bad things that can happen. And one dog can hurt another dog when they're allowed to be so possessive of their food bowl. I don't care what kind of breed you've got. I don't care what you have the dog for. If you reach in there, that's your food bowl. You bought, paid for it. This is one of the services you provide to this dog. And if you need to pick it up, you can. So do whatever is meaningful. Now, this is a giant, 100-pound Pyrenees that I had to do something that meant something to it. If this was a lab puppy, and I've had little lab puppies, and if they ever did that, I didn't slam them onto the ground, but I would do something that they didn't want again. And that's really your criteria. And it depends on the individual animal. If it's a little, like a wiener dog, you know, what, those are the most dangerous of all dogs. And it does that. Don't slam a wiener dog to the ground because they got that long back and you got to be careful. But do something to them, on a very personal level that they never want you to do again. And that's how you get them to stop that. It's that simple. But if you kind of try to just work around it and hope it goes away, you know, maybe it will. But if it doesn't, then you're in a lot of trouble. So that's one to address right off. This also goes, the food aggressive is for the other dog aggressive. And I'll just be honest about what I do with that. And I've had little G, as a matter of fact, very highly sociable dog. And because all of her life that she knew was with her litter mates, where they just all mauled the heck out of one another, right? That's what you do. You just roll and jump and pop. And so that's their initial perspective. And then when you allow them on the other dogs to maul the heck out of them, one, if you have a, let me say this, if your other dog is one that just stops that right then, because some dogs do, although there's a danger there, you know, you don't want to get an eye, a tooth in an eye or something like that. I let the cats do that, but the cats teach them, don't mess with the cat. But I don't tend to do that with dogs because, you know, it probably go okay, but sometimes it doesn't. But what I do is when, and I just did this, I had a bumper without a rope on it that I had in my hand, and she was jumping on another dog that was here. And I just kind of sidearmed that thing, and it just hit her crossbody. Just boom. And as soon as it hit her, I said no. And she was just shocked. She was shocked that she had had something like that happening when she was going after this other dog. And she stopped right there. So I wouldn't do that with every dog. But this one takes a little bit more of a... She's just so motivated for fun and for, you know, she's kind of a crackhead. So I had to do something on there. So I would do that again. You know, I was wishing I had a slingshot when she was spending, we spent 5-10 minutes chasing her around with the dead quail. You know, I would have done something to physically impact that dog so that she knew something bad happened to her while she was doing something bad. At this age, that's the best way I can get across to them mentally. I can't just assume that they understand you're doing something I don't approve of and I need you to stop. They need to have something bad happen to me while I was doing that. And if it happens a couple times more, I probably am not going to do that again because I don't like the bad thing. So that's a little bit of something there on the, you know, I guess it sounds tough, but on these, especially these little retrievers, but again, I did it with my other, the wiener dog, the Pyrenees, all of those. I instead of dealing with the problem over time, I just create an association. Bad stuff happens when you do that. Don't do that anymore. And it works extremely well. That's sort of how they learn in their dog pack. That's how they learn. You mess with that guy, it's very bad. Don't mess with that guy. And so I basically use a real primal thing with these young dogs so that they learn, you know, what's how the world is going to be and how they're going to be in it. Okay, finally, we're about to half an hour. That's probably enough on endless puppy things. I do want to talk about little puppies and the cold. Now, I'm in Colorado, which can be very cold. It was 0 this morning. It's not like y'all up in Minnesota and in North Dakota, but that's a killer cold up there, especially right now. It's been, you know, intermittently weirdly warm and weirdly cold. But I just want to talk about my experience. Again, I defer to what veterinarians say on all this stuff. But you can still get a puppy out when the weather is cold, just not for very long and you got to be careful about certain conditions. So it was between 0 and 10 this morning. We came in from our morning walk. It was 11. So it was warming up. But what I did with her is we shortened it. It was probably just a little over 10 minutes, somewhere between 10 and 15. And we stayed where there was dirt because, you know, you don't really frostbite the feet. You don't really freeze those little foot bottoms when there's no water present. So it's a little easier on the feet. It's still cold, but it's not cold and wet where there's a little tiny bit of melting every time the little warm paw comes down on the snow. So we stayed where there was mostly just dirt. So that really limited where we were. We did that, kept moving real quickly. Never, you know, didn't stop too much. And you could tell she was kind of starting to gather stuff up and getting real cold. It wasn't, I don't think that her feet were cold. I think she was just cold, even though she does spend a significant amount of time outside, not when it's zero, obviously. But we still did our walk, and we did it kind of briskly, and then we came in. And I also didn't do a retrieves when it's really cold, because I don't want anything, you know, those, if you have your bumpers are outside and you throw it, that it can be, you know, that thing is very, very cold, and you get those little soft little warm mouths. You know, sometimes that can be bad. Sometimes you can chip a tooth because a frozen bumper is so hard. So we didn't do any retrieving at that temperature. You know, we came back in the house, and then of course just went hog wild because it's warm and we're just going nuts. But you can do things depending on your, you know, if it's deep snow. Again, what really makes it instantaneously bad is when the water, literal water, is in contact with those little, with the skin. That's where the you know, heat exchange is just sucked right out of the dog's foot. And so bad stuff can happen. So if you have a bunch of snow, particularly, you know, fresh snow that's really meltable, that's very tough. And so you really want to limit your time. But they can still go out for a short period of time. They have to. I mean, they've got to air and stuff. But you can condition them to be out in the cold weather. And I've done that with G. You know, right now it's 20 degrees. She's outside in her kennel and she's fine. She's got her hay and snow, and it's not hay in her barrel, and there's no snow in there. So it's warm and she can run around and do stuff. So she's in there now, and you can condition them to be able to be okay in colder temperatures. It's not like immediate, and it's not like an 8-week-old puppy either. So they can manage themselves in cold weather for not too long. It's just, you got to be careful what those little feet are on. And I'm sure that, you know, you couldn't put a booty on her. She'd eat it in a heartbeat, or at least rip it off. So I'm just getting her conditioned to nice cold weather. And I know it's working, because when she's in the house for a very long period of time, she just gets kind of hot, because it's like 68 or 69 in here. And she's just going, whew, this is kind of warm. So that means the cooler temperature conditioning is working. So just be cautious about the surface you're on and the amount of time you're out there. And you don't, if you got a lot of deep snow also, you got to be careful about getting them wet, because wet just sucks the heat out of you. We all know, if we were wet. So being wet is something to avoid. So if they got snow all over on them and it's melting, you know, that really shortens your time down on that. And if they're walking on the snow, that's going to shorten your time a little bit too. But they'll tell you, and you can tell when they're starting to get cold. But again, even the little guys, we can begin to condition them to be hardy outdoor animals, because this is hunting time. And for those that are hunting, you know, this is when they're out there doing it. So there's nothing wrong with getting them conditioned to it. You just can't subject them to any temperature that they're not acclimated to. And puppies, they can't be out in real cold, and they do need a really good housing and environment where their body heat can warm it. That's why my kennels are the canine condos. They're the barrels with the little flap and all that. So you fill that up with grass hay and it's nice. And their body heat literally can heat that. So that's why she can be out there right now when it's 20 degrees. Because her body heat is just heating that barrel up, and she's fine. And then she can come out, play if she wants, go back in and be warm. So she will be conditioned to go hunting in whatever condition there is or whatever it is, and also come in the house and wreak havoc with the cat. So that's today's Heavily Puppy. For those of you with older dogs, you know, maybe when you're getting ready to get another one, just some things to think about. And her name is G, and I will keep reporting on her. And right now, I have a crackhead on my hands with a lot of attitude, so it's fun. And I will continue to report and check on Facebook page. And to do that, it's a closed group, because of what happened before when I was kind of attacked for being the world's most hideous dog person in the world. So we made it a closed group. So you'll have to friend someone on Facebook, me or someone else that's in the group, and then they can bring you into the group. So in case anybody wants to get on there and see all this, they are welcome. Meanwhile, I hope everybody stays safe and healthy, and I will be back soon.